shining star. His job to offer battle to bad men near and far. He conquered fear and he conquered hate. He turned dark night into day. He made his blazing saddle a torch to light the way. When outlaws ruled the West and fear filled the land, a cry went up for a man with guts to take the West in hand.
Welcome to Westerns with Dad. This is Matt.
And this is Dad.
And on this episode, we'll be talking about Blazing Saddles from 1974, the Mel Brooks comedy. This is a wonderful movie. You've all seen this movie, right? This is an absolute classic of the genre. I think
it's hilarious from the title.
Yeah. Is this the undisputed comedy Western classic? Like, there's no comedy Western that even comes close to this.
No, this is one of the greatest comedies of all time, in my opinion.
Your opinion, the AFI's opinion, a lot of reviews would echo that, and Roger Ebert certainly. It's just an agreed on classic for sure. And what a ballsy film, huh? What a just
unbelievable for the time. 1974, is that what it is?
Yeah.
74.
Remarkable.
Man. How he got most of this stuff through the censor board is amazing.
Mm-hmm. And just this movie is racially like explosive almost.
Yeah, and intentionally so.
Yeah. It's a remarkably brave film. I believe you know, Mel Brooks has said you could never make this movie today.
Right.
Not in least because of all the N-words in it. Man, there's a lot of N-words in this movie.
Right.
But they're important to the film, actually, I would say. Like, because this is a satire of Westerns, of course, but also a satire of racism and bigotry, as it turns
yes.
out. And maybe
right.
the most effective one ever made, maybe. A big part of that is just making it seem ridiculous, which is Mel Brooks's whole thing. It's what he did in The Producers, you know, with Nazis and fascism, and does it again here. And man, it's just wonderful. It's a terrific film. I feel like this is going to be an interesting one to talk about simply because I don't believe there's anyone who doesn't know this stuff.
There's no one that doesn't have a favorite scene or, you know, regularly quotes from this film. I mean, it's incredible.
Mm-hmm. When did you, do you have a memory of seeing this for the first time? Because I sure did.
Yes. I was driving down to Las Vegas for an audition. A failed audition, as it turned out. I was driving with my buddy Scott Norton down to California.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to Vegas first, and then I drove him down to California, and he said, "Oh, you got to see this film. Let's go see this film by Mel Brooks, Blazing Saddles." And he said, "I've seen it. I want to see it again." And
yeah.
we went to see it, and he said, "This is the funniest film you'll ever see." So I was prepared, but not fully.
Yeah,
just the scathing humor, you know, the scathing approach to racism and bigotry, like you say, was just astounding.
It is striking
hilarious.
From the first moments of the film, honestly. You get through the song, which is hilarious, and then immediately you're on to just like, whoa, racism. Racism in a real 1970s way, you know? I think the first line is, "Doc the chink at half day's pay for sleeping on the job."
Stupid yeah, that's right.
Okay, I'm gonna avoid that from now on. That's
avoid but, what?
Racial slurs on the podcast. You know that's.
Well, it's hard to avoid them. You know, talking about this film.
It's gonna be real difficult. It's really tough to, you know, and this is such a quotable film, as you say. That was a quotable line, and it's just a nothing line from the beginning of the movie. Just lets you know what kind of film you're going to get here.
Well, that's followed up. That line you just said is followed up by, come on, how about a good old-fashioned N-word work song?
Oh, yeah, flurry of N-words right away. It's and that's a wonderful joke too. I get a kick out of you. But it's also a microcosm for the whole film, because right there, it's the racist guy is looking ridiculous and stupid, and that's the whole joke of that scene. Right. Is him getting really excited about the Camptown lady. And the guys perform the hell out of it.
All these macho-looking cowboys, right, dancing around the Camptown ladies.
Yeah, I remember seeing this when I was you showed this to me. You know, I was under the impression, I don't know, I think I'd seen like a Mad Magazine version of it, and I believe I mentioned it to you, and you were just like, Oh, you got to see that. Oh, we got to rent that tonight, you know? And
how and old were this? You?
Oh,
I you remember?
I was young. I would guess around 10, which, you know,
which probably went contrary to your mother's wishes.
Oh, well, you know, the 10 years old is the perfect age to see this movie.
You weren't supposed to see an R-rated film until you were 16, as I recall.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. You know how many workarounds we came up for?
Lots. Lots.
Yeah. I was persistent. That was like the thing I cared most about at age 10 or 11, I would say.
Seeing R-rated films?
Yeah. I mean, look, that had fallen away long before 16. You know, I remember, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, I got mom to buy me a ticket to a Friday or no, it was a Nightmare on Elm Street film once. I was just like they wouldn't let me at the theater, so I convinced mom to come up to the thing and buy me a ticket for Wes Craven's New Nightmare. Yeah, and that was the end of the R-rated movie thing.
What was that film I actually pulled you out of?
Oh, well, Ricochet. We have talked about that on the podcast.
Uh-huh. That's right, yeah.
I've always suspected that was more because you were afraid of getting busted on it than actually the contents of the film.
It was, yeah, there was a little bit of that, no doubt about it. But it was pretty bad, you got to admit.
Oh, yeah, I've watched it again since then, and it's a really gross, lurid, nasty film, Ricochet. Yeah. That would be a Denzel Washington, John Lithgow cop film from I don't know when. It's you know, a real gross cop movie. A lot of violence and sex stuff.
I just remember the skill saw scene.
Yeah, I do too. I sure do. But that's, I don't know. I feel like this film should be seen by young people. This is.
Yes.
I would say like an important movie, but it might be an important movie for the reasons we've been talking about, and yeah, I feel like a young person, a child, would respond to this film in the appropriate manner, and yeah, you know,
and the satire would be clear. That's the thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh. Yeah, even it's of not the Western. That subtle.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you see who wrote this film by any chance?
Five different writers.
Mm-hmm.
Richard Mel Brooks and Richard Pryor, I remember, were two of them.
Those are the big names, yeah. Richard Pryor in particular. Now, of course, the lead of this film, the character Black Bart, is a black guy who is, you know, race is pretty much what the film is about. Can you imagine Richard Pryor in this role?
That's who Mel Brooks wanted.
Absolutely, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and of course,
Richard Pryor. Richard Pryor was a relative unknown at the time.
Yeah, apparently he could not get him cleared by the studio's insurance because of all of his drug problems and drug-related material. So he was too high to insure for somebody that did not have a following at the time.
Well, apparently he was pretty unreliable as well.
That's why he was uninsurable. And... did you also know that, and this blew my mind, that John Wayne was offered the role of the Waco Kid?
I knew that they had contacted John Wayne, but I didn't know it was the Waco Kid.
Yeah, uh-huh.
It wouldn't have been, it couldn't have been John Wayne.
Well, he agreed.
Yeah.
He said he liked it and that he wished he could, but it just would not work for him.
He said he'd be the first one to see it.
Uh-huh, yeah. But there is an alternate universe version of this movie that stars Richard Pryor and John Wayne. Can you imagine that?
Wow. No.
No.
I can't. Not after Cleavon Little and Gene Wilder.
Well, they're both wonderful. That's the thing. Like, you know, you wouldn't really want to change anything about this movie because it's kind of perfect in what it is. And and these two guys are just excellent in it. Especially, I think, Cleavon Little, who I can't name another thing I've seen him in.
He was in a short-lived sitcom, I think, on TV, but I can't remember what it was.
I mean, he must have worked. He's so good in this, you know. Yeah. I know he worked, but I, you know, there's no other role that comes close. And, you know, well, he's a young man in this, looks like 25 or something like that.
Well, he died fairly young, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah. It was still, you know, decades later. I'm surprised he didn't end up with a body of work, considering how good he is and how iconic this role ended up being.
Right.
This is a terrific role, Bart.
Yeah.
And he's perfect for it, you know? And, yeah. And of course, Gene Wilder is this is one of the legendary Gene Wilder performances. Everyone in this is at their absolute best.
They wanted to offer Gene Wilder the Harvey Carman role.
Hmm. Hmm.
At first. And he declined and said, no, that's not right for me. But I'll do the Waco Kid. And Mel Brooks wanted somebody with a little older for the Waco Kid, you know, an old Alky.
Yeah, right.
Leathery face and the whole thing. And Gene Wilder didn't want to do it unless he could do the Waco Kid.
Oh, did you hear that they actually did cast a different actor as this in this role?
No.
Yeah, a guy named Gig Young.
Oh, they actually casted him? I knew they were considering him. Oh, yeah. They casted him, right?
Yes, he ended up on the set. And it turned out he was too much of an actual alcoholic to pull it off, and he was hospitalized within, you know, like the first day, and then it was clear that they were just like, oh, this won't work. This guy is, you know, just a guy in his 70s, and he was, you know, too drunk to pull it off, and then Gene Wilder just happened to know the lines already, so
yeah,
that's how he ended up with the role. Yeah, you know. Well, there's great stories about this film. I mean, it's just one of those great films, And you talked about the Harvey Corman role. I think he steals the film. I think he's...
Oh, he's amazing. He and Madeline Kahn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Madeline Kahn is in there too. And Slim Pickens is in it. God.
Slim Pickens is just amazing.
Stacked with
amazing.
Iconic performances. Yeah, yeah.
What in the wide, wide world of sports is going on?
Man, he's great. You almost get the sense that that guy, like, he doesn't quite know that he's in a parody, almost. Like, he's got such a poker face through this, Slim Pickens. I mean, there are rumors that that's the case with him in Strangelove, is that he didn't realize he was in a parody. And well, it would probably be impossible not to notice that in Blazing Saddles, but... But he's got he's playing it so straight. It's hilarious. Speaking of not knowing that it was a parody, the song, as sung by Frankie Lane, he didn't know it was a parody.
He didn't?
No, he's talking about this. He's like, yeah, I just thought it was a bad song.
Just the title just cracks me up. Blazing Saddles.
It's just a non sequitur, right?
He rode a blazing saddle. He wore a shining star.
But the earnestness that he brings to it, the fact that he's trying to get across these lines that he thinks are serious, makes that song. Apparently, they only thing they did to make it more ridiculous was add the whip noises.
Yeah, lots of whip noises.
There's a lot of whip noises. It's a really good song, though. I love that song. All the music in this is really good.
Frankie Lane does it perfectly. I mean, there should have been nobody else but Frankie Lane do that song.
Yeah, I mean, this is a Wikipedia fact that I found about this, but it sounds whether it's true or not, it's pretty hilarious. Which is that they hadn't intended to actually get Frankie Lane. They just put out a job posting for a Frankie Lane type, and he responded. Yeah. So I don't know. I think this will defy our usual format, in that, you know, the plot of this is pretty irrelevant. It's pretty basic to grasp. You know, going through scene by scene will just be like, and then there's this joke that I like so much, and then there's this joke. So, I mean, I think we could do it, but sort of loosely, you know? Talk about some of the performances and ideas in it, I guess, more than the actual chain of events. Because, again, you've all seen Blazing Saddles. You know, it's pretty straightforward as a narrative. But, you know, right. Just the third wall breaks and stuff like that, and, you know, choices that they're making and what they're satirizing. Maybe we can talk about those sort of things.
That sounds good.
Cleavon Little's character, working on the railroad at the beginning, he never gets a name beyond Bart, and that's just the joke, is that he's Black Bart. This is basically it's Bugs Bunny. I mean, they get very explicit about that the Mongo jokes later.
Right, right. The Candygram and all that.
But even from the beginning, he feels so much like Bugs Bunny, like a real life Bugs Bunny in a way, more than I've ever seen anyone else, I would say.
They even use the Looney Tunes music.
They do at in one the Mongo point. Scene. Yeah. From the first scene he's introduced with singing the I Get a Kick Out of You and the handcart scene, you know.
Yeah.
He's just got this effervescence to him. It's good-natured and it's a good way to put it. It's a great performance. I love him in this film, and again, that's why I think it's weird he wasn't in more stuff. So the plot, if you somehow haven't seen this film, is that a railroad is being built across a country, and they have to shift their course, and as a result
they run into some quicksand.
They run into quicksand on the charted path, so they decide that instead they're going to go around a bluff and through a town called Rock Ridge. So the railroad baron is going to have to get everyone, steal everyone's land in the fashion of an old time Western. I mean, this is essentially the plot that we're always talking about on this show.
Land stealing, land snatching,
people trying to get running off their land. You know, he hires thugs and goons to scare people or just threaten them until they leave or sell or whatever, and that's what it is. That's your plot. And they hire a black man to go be the sheriff, knowing that the racism of the town will result in just a big calamity, catastrophe. And he ultimately is, of course, really good at being a sheriff. And there's a lot of comedy along the way. that's the plot, basically.
That's it.
The most basic of Western plots. But then beyond that, it's playing with tropes, scenes and stuff, you know, that is familiar from the Western. I think we've talked about, if I recall, on the Hang 'Em High episode, I wondered if that wasn't a direct influence on the Hedley Lamarr stuff near the beginning, with the gallows outside of his building.
Yeah, hang him high. Yeah. Didn't think of that.
Yeah. I mean, it's probably no... Are there any specific films you would say are referenced in this? It's more of genre overall.
It's a genre piece, mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not in the way that Young Frankenstein or Spaceballs are direct parodies. This is a... I mean, I can't even
satirizing the Western as a genre.
I can't even think of a specific film that is ever referenced in this.
No.
That's interesting. You don't often see that in the parody.
Let's see. Huh. Nope. Nope, I can't think of one. Well, where they elect appoint a black sheriff to a town.
I got it. Destry Rides Again.
Destry Rides Again?
Isn't that the
Audie Murphy?
It's the Jimmy Stewart film, and it's the Madeline Kahn character.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay, mm-hmm. The Madeline Kahn character. Yeah, it's a definite reference to Marlene Dietrich.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Although I only know that is one film where that she played that character. She could have done more, as far as I recall. I've never seen Destry Rides Again. Maybe we should watch that one of these days.
That's a pretty good movie.
But that's the only one I can think of. That and Bugs Bunny. Yeah. These early scenes with Harvey Korman as Hedley Lamarr are... God, he's funny.
Harvey Korman's hilarious.
Now, I'm not
overly familiar. He's hilarious in everything he does.
I think I've never seen him in anything other than Mel Brooks movies, actually. He was a TV guy for a large part, right?
Did you ever watch the Carol Burnett show?
I never really did.
Oh, he was incredible. He and Tim Conway would get each other laughing on the show, and it was just hilarious. They couldn't stop laughing.
He has that 1960s, 1970s kind of a comic persona, like you know, like almost like a Victor Borga kind of, you know, kind of droll, almost, almost Noel Coward-y in a sense, but you know, kind of upper class twit. But he's also, you know, not above vulgarity. It's very good, you know.
Yep.
And yeah, he's always been, I think, my favorite performance in this, personally. I mean, you know, I think Madeline Kahn gets a lot of the attention. Nominated for an Oscar, for God's sake. But
that's right,
man.
Yeah.
I just love Corman's delivery on lines. You know, like, Rock Ridge, oh Taggart. That's it. Daddy loves Froggy. Froggy loves Daddy. Mm.
Yeah. No. Too Jewish.
Too Jewish. Yeah, he sees with Slim Pickens. Slim Pickens.
That's right.
Slim Pickens is so funny in those scenes, too. Again, because he's playing it so straight, you know. I got an idea. Let's just round up the firstborn child of every family. we can do number 6 on him. God. He was really talented at comedy. Again, there's another guy I don't really know from things other than comedy. He's so recognizable in them, but
I think he ever did anything other than comedy.
Really? He didn't do some westerns?
Harvey Korman?
He must have done some westerns at some point.
Nope. I can't think of anything.
Wow, I didn't realize
anything that. Other than comedy that Harvey Korman was in.
Mm-hmm. Well, he is the most prominent of a supporting cast of what appear to be real actors, not comic actors, I would say. Even though, as you say, he might be a comic actor more than anything. But the supporting cast of, you know, of the population of Rock Ridge all look like people that are in actual westerns. Every single one of the Johnsons is... feels like a real Western actor. Like the preacher. Has our women been stampeded and our cattle raped? All those guys playing it totally straight. I had a hard time figuring out which one was which because they're all named Johnson. But the,
no, they all do a great job.
They're the heavy set balder guy. He's kind of like,
yeah.
God, he's good. He has the best he's great. Deadpan. Like, now who can argue with that? That guy.
Not only was that authentic frontier gibberish.
Oh, man, they're wonderful. It's and I think that's what makes this film work as a film. You know, like we said, the story is no great shakes, but it doesn't matter because it's, you know,
it's one setup of a joke after another.
Well, yeah, yeah. These guys though, these guys give it gravitas that of a Western, which makes it funnier. You know, like they give it the. Like you would see that guy in a Western like Hang 'Em High or something, or you know, you would see these guys, you know, playing the citizens in a, you know, your average John Wayne film, and
right.
They have kind of a High Noon quality to them sometimes. And so when they deliver the jokes or the N words, it's it kills every time. I guess the. Let's see, Mel Brooks as the Governor Lepetamain, probably his major role in definitely his major role in this. I love that performance too. That's a some pure vaudeville-y Mel Brooks kind of character work. I found this fascinating this piece of trivia about this. That character Lepetamain.
Yeah.
Is named after a 19th century stage comedian who was an expert in farting. That was his whole.
Because the verb in French for to fart is pété.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Like the guy's actual name was Lepetamain, which I guess the idea was that it translates to a fart maniac. It's a real guy, apparently. Was said to be old. Part of his bit was he would blow out candles from several feet away with his farts. Like...
shoot.
Yeah.
I love the what do they call those little bat and ball things? I keep forgetting what they used to call those.
I don't know either. I was trying to figure it out when I wrote that down. Yeah, the ball and paddle game.
The ball and paddle game. Yeah.
That's another good bit just on the side of you know, they. They traded.
Harvey Korman must have had to practice to get it down.
That's what's great about that scene is Harvey Korman nailing the paddle game. That's and those are no joke paddles. Those
I could never
real
do
loose
that.
Elastic straps. You can tell.
I had a couple of those when I was a kid, and I could never do it right.
I had a period of time where I knew. I there was a moment where I could totally do those. It was just a muscle memory thing. I just like. Figured it out. I haven't done it in years. I bet I don't have it anymore.
Do they even exist?
I'm sure you can find those in a dollar store.
Archie McPhee or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. let's see. Plot-wise, the plot, whatever. There's the medieval executioner. That's hilarious. Yes. the fact that the gallows outside are run by a medieval style hunchback with a big like this feels like a laugh-in character. Is this a reference to something that I'm not familiar with? Because I just know it as the Mel Brooks hunchback guy.
I couldn't possibly
fit in more.
Couldn't possibly work him in before Tuesday. I don't know if it's a specific reference to a film or anything, but it's just a character type.
he's not even in Young Frankenstein, is he? He's just in this.
He's sort of a composite of Igor from Frankenstein and medieval executioner.
that is the weirdest joke idea. Like, yeah. It's just like, oh, well, what if there's a hunchback out there hanging people? Like, he's wearing chainmail.
Yeah.
He's got one eye out. It's a remarkable joke. I can't even. How do you come up with that?
You're all the same in my eye.
Yeah. they're going to hang the horse at one point. Oh, God.
The guy on the horse, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, Bart becomes mayor of Rockridge.
Sheriff.
Sheriff of, damn it. Yeah, Sheriff of Rockridge. And that scene when he arrives, by the way, is one of the funniest.
Oh, ones. Yeah. We'd like to extend a laurel and hearty handshake to our new N-word.
Yeah. This also has the line that is voted on as one of the greatest lines of all time by the AFI when they did their silly, 100 best lines ever list. That is, excuse me while I whip this out. So which is great because, yeah, yes, they definitely go straight into the black dick jokes in this film. That is very much a part of it. Because, like, they had huge 1970s balls when they made this. It's remarkable that they got this by. That is a joke I feel like they could get away with more easily today than the N-words, but in the 70s feels, like, shocking that there's so many right. black dick jokes in this.
Especially with Madeline Kahn.
Oh, this is the one joke that they say they had to cut from the film was in that scene.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I heard about that. Mm-hmm. Excuse me, but sorry.
I wrote it down. Uh-huh.
You're sucking on my arm or something?
Yeah, I hate to disillusion you, ma'am, but you are sucking on my arm. Geniuses. There's no other word.
That's the one joke they couldn't get by the censor board.
Exactly, yeah. yeah, it's Madeline Kahn. Madeline Kahn is playing Lily von Stoop, which again is a Marlene Dietrich takeoff.
It's a
direct satire of sort of a German chanteuse. She has a big musical number, parodying her style. Nominated for Best Supporting Actress, she's just hilarious. I mean, there's very little
perfect.
Else to say other than she's great. I had a crush on her actually when I was a kid.
She's wonderful.
You know, probably because of this movie. I just love Madeline Kahn in this and everything really.
She's flawless.
Mm-hmm. I think I prefer her work in Young Frankenstein, personally. Did you
do
know?
Yeah.
I do. Yeah, I got
well, she has a little more of a role. I don't know. I don't know. I think I'd go with Blazing Saddles myself. Just that the number she does on stage is just wonderful.
You know this movie
and the choreography.
Yeah. Do you know this movie and Young Frankenstein both came out in 1974?
Wow.
What a year, huh?
Well, that's production.
Yeah.
Man.
Like, two of the greatest comedy. You make two of the greatest comedies of all time in one year. That's amazing.
That's incredible. Really? The same year?
Yeah, 1974.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. That is production, like you say. That working at that pace, at that speed. No, I mean, and no wonder he couldn't just keep doing these forever.
Yeah.
I mean, those are the two. Those are the best ones that he made. He made some good ones after that, but I don't think he. Those are definitely the two funniest Mel Brooks movies.
Oh yeah, no question. Two classics.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would say anything after. Well, man, I don't know. I'm of a generation that has a soft spot for Robin Hood Men in Tights.
It's not of the same caliber as those two, though.
No. I mean, they never got back to that, you know? Like, High Anxiety, Spaceballs, Robin Hood, they're all okay. Yeah. They're fine. History of the World Part 1, it's all right. Yeah, they're all funny. It. Yeah.
It cracks me up every time.
Hey Abbott is a great joke. It's
Hey Abbott.
It's the dumbest joke. Because I didn't even understand what that was when I first saw it. Like, I didn't know what Abbott and Costello were when I saw Robin Hood Men in Tights. And there's that scene is so funny too, because it is just like the first, it's 30 seconds of just, good morning, Abbott. Good day to you, Abbott. How are you today, Abbott?
Hey, Abbott. I love it.
See, Robin Hood definitely has its moments. That's a funny one. That's It just has some dumb moments too, you know. Yeah, you gotta take the good with the bad.
Mel Brooks called Blazing Saddle a dumb movie.
I mean, it's,
you know,
dumb,
just a dumb premise.
It is a dumb film, quote unquote. But it's also kind of really, like, deadly smart too, in the way it is timed and the way it deploys its comedy. You know, like, I mean, you can't be this good without being smart about it. I would say, but yeah, I mean, yeah, it frequently is, you know, rubber chicken dumb. You know,
rubber chicken dumb.
And God, the timing is so incredible in every scene. I mean. Like I said, I don't want to just do a podcast here of referencing, you know, jokes and saying, and then this joke is really funny too. You know, you again,
which wouldn't be that bad, really.
It's Blazing Saddles. You know how funny this is, or if you haven't seen it, I mean, well, that's absurd. Go watch Blazing Saddles if you haven't seen it. the farting scene.
If you were to pick a scene from the movie that stood out. A representative scene from the movie would be the farting scene, right?
I would pick Cleavon Little's arrival in Rock Ridge.
Yeah, that's pretty good too.
It has AFI's all-time greatest line. Excuse me while I whip this out.
Yeah.
But the farting scene. I mean, that was
that's one that everybody remembers.
Yeah, that was definitely the one that. I think the first thing I was told about this movie is that it had farts in it, and and apparently this may be bullshit, but according to Wikipedia, the first audible farts in cinema.
Yeah, they didn't actually allow the farts to be audible when they showed it on TV for the first time. They were just guys standing up and, you know, sitting back down. What a waste.
Brooks did say that the reason that the farts are so loud is so that they would, he knew the scene would get laughs, and so he wanted the fart noise to rise above the sound of the audience laughing.
That's right. Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, that's a great bit. Gene Wilder's quick draw bit. That's his big scene in the film, really. Just him telling the story of being the Waco kid and doing the quick draw on the chess piece. That's a good scene. Just a funny scene. Yeah, but I shoot with this hand.
I love the introduction too. The first time he sees the Waco kid, he's hanging down from the bed.
Are we awake?
Yeah. Yeah, the upper bunk. Yeah. Are we awake? I don't know. Are we black? You need any help? Oh, all I can get.
Man, imagine that scene with John Wayne and Richard Pryor. God. Yeah, but I shoot with this hand. That little kid shot me in the ass.
Yeah.
Um, Mongo, the Alex Karras role, classic,
yeah.
classic yep. part of this film. just the
Mongo only pawn in.
Yeah.
Story of life.
It's apparently this was the character that Richard Pryor contributed to most for some reason. Mongo.
Mongo, yeah.
Mongo was all Richard Pryor, I guess. That's amazing to me. Because it totally feels like a Mel Brooks character, whereas the, Bart, of course, feels like Pryor. But, yeah, Mongo was a big Richard Pryor thing, I guess. He rides into town on a bull. He punches a horse out. He, crushing everyone with the piano. All this stuff. God, it's... Yeah, he's just a bad guy employed by Harvey Korman to come run out the sheriff, and yeah, he's just a big dumb guy. Comes in and you know, kind of a George from a Mice and Men type. Mongo like candy, and then yes, Mongo only pawn in Game of Life. Great, this is all of this stuff, man. And the Madeline Kahn scene, and you know Harvey Korman looking for his frog in the bath. I also the Hedy Lamarr thing. Did you know Hedy Lamarr?
Hedy Lamarr actually sued them, right?
Yeah, which they talk about happening in the movie.
Now, yeah, what does Mel Brooks' character say in the film?
Don't worry, it's the 1880s. You'll be able to sue her.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. I did not know who Hedy Lamarr was. Barely even know now, frankly, other than an old-timey actress. And so my main exposure to her is... as the butt of this joke in Blazing Saddles.
Well,
which is probably exactly
what
she
was. She was known as, she was touted as the most beautiful woman in the world at one point.
Yeah.
Well, she's a beautiful woman. No
doubt weren't all starlets back in the day touted as the most beautiful woman in the world? Yeah. Carol Lombard.
Or the It Girl, yeah. Or whatever.
You know what? I have no reason to run down Hedy Lamarr. I'm sure we'll... I would watch a Hedy Lamarr movie. Has she done any Westerns? She must have. That's, you know,
rising
to prominence at that time. Yeah, well. Yeah. His irritation at that is a good running joke. The,
yeah. That's Hedley.
That's Hedley. Yeah. Mm. Okay. The when he gathers a private army... to go take out Rock Ridge, and it's just a bunch of bad guy types, you know, from the 1970s, including the Klan. That is, if I had to pick my favorite joke in the whole film, I think it's the Klan joke with the
hey, where are the white women at?
Yeah, everything about that is so funny, and I love Gene Wilder's the racist voice that Gene Wilder puts on for that. He has sort of a sing-song quality. He's like, oh, boys, look what I got.
Look what I got.
Yeah, that's a crack up every time.
And that's the thing about this movie. I don't know how many times I've seen it, but every time I laugh.
Always. Oh,
every
yeah.
time. You know,
I've seen
it's,
this...
nothing's gone cold.
I've seen this a dozen times probably in my life. I couldn't get enough of this when I was a kid. Went out and bought the VHS from Suncoast Video, if I recall. and watched it just the other night. I was so excited to watch this one again. And I watched it with a friend who had never seen it before. That was kind of cool.
Oh, my God. A guy who'd never seen it before?
Yeah, huh? Yeah, it was crazy. Uh-huh. And yeah, and he enjoyed it. Said, I think I like Spaceballs more, but yeah, it's good. Idiot.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he didn't get Randolph Scott jokes.
Yeah.
The Randolph Scott joke isn't much of a joke, but I still love it.
Yeah. Randolph Scott.
You do it for Randolph Scott. What? What's the joke? I don't know, but I still laugh at that. Also, how I was introduced to Randolph Scott, as we said in one of our previous Randolph Scott episodes, I believe.
Yep.
Because, yeah, at the time, I didn't know who it was, and I remember having to ask you who it was when the first time we watched it. That's a memory I do have about that. Wow. So the last half hour of this film, it just becomes increasingly meta and fourth wall breaky, and it's the plan that they come up with to outwit the attackers, Hedley Lamarr's private army, is to build a fake town overnight in the style of a Hollywood soundstage. Okay, first off, this plan makes no practical sense at all.
No.
There's not a shred of it. But beyond that, is this some sort of meta Hollywood gag about the Western era of filmmaking and or just Hollywood in general and the artificiality of the sets? I don't know what's going on in this. Is that a gag?
Well, judging from how they move into, you know, they crash through the wall of a soundstage, into a modern day film.
Oh, that's just it. Yeah,
I'd say that's a pretty good assumption.
Yeah, and then they crash through this set into the real world there, and man, that should derail this film completely, and it doesn't. It's hilarious.
No. In fact, Black Bart and the Waco Kid get a ticket to see how the movie ends.
That is a great way of ending that sequence too. They're watching the end of the film, and then all of a sudden we're back in the film, the world of the film, for the last 5 minutes. And God, somebody's got to go back and get a shitload of dimes. Oh, God, there's just so much in this movie. It stops being concerned with working as a film in that last half hour, I would say. You know, if you watch, say, Madeline Kahn's movements narratively. Because just she's, she's got her big sequence, which is about 20 minutes. An hour, near an hour point, about, halfway through the film. There's about 20 minutes of Madeleine Kahn doing a Marlene Dietrich impersonation. And the rest of the movie, she's just like, just bounces from scene to scene. Just, she's there, and then she's there, and then she's there. Like, Hedley Lamarr's got her tied to a stove, at one point. And then the next time we see her, she's hanging out with the people of Rock Ridge.
That's right. Then she's singing, yeah, 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 with a bunch of Nazis.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Right. I love all this German stuff in this, too. He can't let them alone.
the German Indian chief?
Yeah, well, that is a Yiddish Indian chief.
Yiddish, yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. The Germans still love probably Westerns.
Oh, yeah?
Have you ever seen a German Western?
No.
Oh, hilarious.
We got to watch a German Western, Dad.
Yeah.
My boss.
If we can find one.
My boss, I was telling him about, talking about this podcast with him, and he said, you know what you got to do? You got to watch Winnetonka, which is a German, a very popular German Western TV movie or something. That is about a German immigrant in America joining forces with a Sioux Indian to do something or other, and it's all in German. And he says it's very popular.
Wow, that sounds like something we should watch.
It does, right? Yeah, I mean, I would take a look at that for sure. When they blow up the bombs in town, pieces of horses fly into the air. That's funny. That's really funny. Yes. It's...
And then all the cardboard figures of the townspeople. Wait, there's one thing we've forgotten. There's no people. That's all right. We just make some.
What is that? Like, what?
with bobblehead necks.
What the hell is the end of this movie's plot? Like, it's just insane. Like, it's not even particularly funny. It's just insane and doesn't make real world sense. And yet, still, it's really funny.
It works.
Yeah.
It does.
And then, of course, they're breaking through the soundstage walls onto the Warner Brothers lot. And they get that great Dom DeLuise cameo. God, it's...
Yeah. Funny.
The gay musical guys. The French Mistake. Being the song, that's a good
French
song.
French Mystique, yeah.
Nope, it's French Mistake.
Mistake?
Yeah.
Really?
I think it's a play on Mystique, but yeah.
Okay. French Mistake.
Yeah. And you had a Hitler pie fight, and, and just it turns into Pee-wee's Big Adventure for a little while there at the end. Running around a movie studio. They go to the Grauman's Chinese Theater again for the end of the film, you know. Yeah. and then they decide to watch the end of the movie, which reverts back into the film's reality. That's pretty great. And I love that Bart just leaves at the end because that's how Westerns end.
Rides off with the Waco kid,
and it ends in the perfect way, the only way this could end, maybe, which is they ride off into the sunset, or at least until they get to the chauffeured car that is waiting for them, and somebody takes their horses and they get into the car and ride off on a trail into the sunset.
Did you notice when Bart's leaving town, he rides up to the Waco kid who's hanging out by the blacksmith shop or something, and he's leaning back on some kind of buggy or something, and he's got the popcorn box from the theater with him?
Yeah, that's right. That's right, yeah. It's just a really good, really smart series of jokes that are, dressed in dumb jokes, like dressed in... the sort of things that appeal to children, and yet they're perfect. This is a tough one to talk about in a way, just because it's self-evidently funny, and the harder you try to poke at something that's obviously funny, the more you flatten it out. And
right, you have to experience it firsthand. Yeah.
Yeah. That said, this film will work no matter what, no matter how many times you've seen it. Even if you've had every joke ruined for you because you've never watched it and you're listening to us for some reason.
You'll still like it.
Yeah.
Go see
it. Oh, yeah. I mean, it's impossible not to find this hilarious.
See it again.
Yeah, uh-huh. Like I said, I've seen this a dozen times. I think it's the best film Mel Brooks ever made. I prefer it to Young Frankenstein. Well, it's Young Frankenstein is a... "quote unquote" better movie, but this is a funnier one. This is the funniest one he made, I think. And
I think so too.
And it would definitely be on a list of the all-time funniest movies ever if I made it. If I did a top 10 funniest comedies, this is 100% going to be on there.
Yep.
Almost certainly top 5. I love this film. Love it. Yep. Love it. Mm-hmm. 5 stars.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
No question.
Easy 5 stars.
All-time classic.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like what's the name of the actor? Maybe you don't know. The guy that wants him to sing a good old N-word work song.
I looked it up because I loved him. He thought he was perfect. Burton Gilliam is his name.
Burton Gilliam.
Character actor is in a ton of Westerns, yeah.
Yep, he was being interviewed in the special features on the DVD.
Oh.
And he said something at the very end. He said, "There'll never be another Blazing Saddles." Yeah. There'll never be anything like it.
It's true. Because they've tried Western comedies many, many times.
Yeah.
Some have worked, others have not. There are a couple real garbage ones recently. 8 Million Ways to Die in the West very specifically is trying to do Blazing Saddles. That was a film from a couple years ago. Did you remember that at all?
I never saw it.
Yeah, it's you know, it's not as bad as its reputation, but it's nothing close to this. Adam Sandler just made a film called The Ridiculous Six, trying to do Blazing Saddles. That is, by all accounts, terrible. I mean...
Well, that's the problem. They're trying to do Blazing Saddles, and they can't.
Yes. Yes, that's exactly it. They're not satirizing a Western. They're trying to recapture Blazing Saddles. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Can you think of any Western comedies that are in the same league as this?
No. Evil Roy Slade was pretty funny. We should probably check that out sometime, but nothing like this.
Mm-hmm. Cat Ballou was a very successful one, I guess mostly due to Lee Marvin, probably.
Lee Marvin made that film, yep.
Yeah, that's... I mean, there's got to be a few more that escape me, but I'm pretty confident in saying that they can't hold a candle to this one.
No.
This is a... Yeah, this is an unqualified rave. Yeah, for sure. One of the formative films of my life.
We should probably do Cat Ballou sometime because of Lee Marvin.
Yeah, we should. Mm-hmm. And for Jane Fonda, and why not? You know, I remember not liking it very much, but I have a better understanding of who Lee Marvin is now, so maybe I would respond
Lee
to it
Marvin
differently.
Lee Marvin is fabulous. Mm-hmm. He deserved the Academy Award for that.
And he deserves it for something, for God's sake. But yeah, he's a... dual roles in that, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. What else have you seen of late, Dad?
Mariners baseball.
How are the Mariners doing this season? I'm going to guess, well, without knowing, not too good.
They actually started to stink up the place before the All-Star break.
Yeah.
Lost a bunch of games, and then they came back from the All-Star break and won five or six in a row. And lost last night to the Houston Astros, but they clawed their way back up into 500 territory. They're still in the picture. They're still in the picture for a playoff berth.
Wow.
Wild card.
Well.
So, yeah.
Maybe they'll get there.
I know what you're thinking.
I mean, we're getting to the point of the year where I can start thinking about NFL. That's what I'm excited about.
Yeah.
It's coming. Yeah.
Who's your team other than the Seahawks?
Oh, well, it's the Seahawks. I mean, living in New York as I do, I'm still able to follow the Seahawks. So we got Seahawk bars out here and stuff.
You have another team other than the Seahawks?
No. I mean, I'll end up watching a lot of Giants and Jets because of, you know,
right. They're
always on.
The local market, yeah.
And, you know, if the Seahawks aren't going to be in the Super Bowl, I would just assume the Giants were, I suppose. I mean, I'm kind of not even that into that. I just like seeing, you know, all the personalities. I just don't want, you know, I just don't like the Patriots.
They got to lose.
Uh-huh, yeah.
Time for them to lose.
Yeah.
How about you? What have you seen lately?
Well, lately I've been watching Twin Peaks, the new series. And we revisited... Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me, or at least I Amanda saw it for the first time. I bet you have not seen Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me.
I haven't seen any Twin Peaks.
Really? Interesting.
None.
I wonder if you would like it. It's weird.
Well, that's why I haven't seen any. I've always wondered if I'd like it.
Well, you certainly wouldn't... I would not recommend starting with Twin Peaks Fire Walk With Me. It is some of the weirdest and most off-putting stuff in the entire Twin Peaks catalog. It is the film. It is a prequel to the series. It is really dark. It is one of the darkest things David Lynch has ever done. It's really unsettling. It's about the last few days of this teenage girl's life before she's murdered, and which starts the series off. She has a horrible, terrifying life going on that is full of like abuse from family members and a lot of self-destructive sex and drugs and also the interference of like you know, black magic and evil and spirits, you know.
I don't know.
it's non-conventional in the way it's structured. You know, it doesn't follow like a narrative in a conventional sense. It's the first half hour is unrelated. It's about FBI characters that don't interact with Laura Palmer at all, and and it's often pitched at a strange kind of sort of a soap opera reality. It you would hate it so much, Dad. The show is good. I think you would find some things to enjoy about the show, but ultimately, maybe not your thing. I have to admit, you know, there's a lot of stuff out there. Maybe Twin Peaks not your thing.
It didn't sound like my thing initially, so I didn't. Mm-hmm. I didn't go for it.
So this can be a shorter episode, but I, you know what? I think we've been getting a little bit long in the tooth, and they're long-winded of late, you know? So I think that'll be fine, especially given that that this film is a tricky one to talk about, simply being a comedy
it's
with
so fun.
Minimal plot. Mm-hmm.
Fun to talk about, though. And, you know, I don't mind just talking about the funny scenes.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean,
they
it's
never
just
get old somehow.
Reliving the experience of watching the film,
and reliving the vocal cadence of the actors, you know, Harvey Korman, Slim Pickens, Gene Wilder, like all these, they're fun to mimic. End quote. what's your favorite line in the film, Dad?
Wow. I've always been kind of partial to need any help? Oh, all I can get.
And I like where all the white women at. That's I think this is also, I mean, you know, just to sort of sum up and close on Blazing Saddles, I think it has, it might be the greatest progressive comedy ever made, too. You know, the progressive politics of it, which are never in your face, you know. It's so much more concerned with making you laugh that it just sort of slips into this, you know, the sort of anti-bigotry kind of sentiment, you know, that by making it look ridiculous. And as a result, it has one of the, real great protagonist, a black lead in a studio film that is a. You know, maybe an R-rated film, but still like one that a family would enjoy, I would say.
Right.
Yeah, this was originally intended to star James Earl Jones before he even got to Mel Brooks. Oh. I read about this. It was called, the working title was Tex X, an homage to Malcolm X. yeah. So I guess it was still a comedy, but I...
Oh, man.
It seems like
Mel Brooks was not originally fingered for the directorial role either, right?
Yeah, he did not originate this story. That was surprising to me, actually.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they had somebody else for director who turned it down.
Alan Arkin.
Alan Arkin, that's right.
Yeah.
Alan Arkin.
Weird. It's... I mean, I can't imagine this ever being better articulated. Like, there's no better version of this out there.
Right.
Even the one starring Richard Pryor and John Wayne. I mean, hard shoes to fill, you know, with Cleavon Little and Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
So that's Blazing Saddles. It's perfect. See it. You've seen
it
already.
If you haven't seen Blazing Saddles, there's a serious void in your cultural awareness.
Absolutely. So if you want to reach us online, you can check us out at westernswithdad.com. And we recommend you do that because our back episodes from, over a year ago at this point, anything older than about a year right now, is not available on the iTunes feed. You have to go to our website, Westerns with Dad, and there's a lot of good ones there. Hateful Eight and Shane and Quigley Down Under and a lot of
Sons of Katie Elder.
A lot of favorite episodes there and more every time we upload. So check those out. You can send us emails at westernswithdad@gmail.com. That has if you want us to watch any specific movies or if you have any questions you'd like us to answer, please email us there. And as always, it would be very useful for the podcast if you rate and review us on iTunes. That, you know, you can do that, and that helps raise the profile of the podcast. We love hearing from you guys, and thank you for following us and continuing to listen to our show. A year and a half in, Dad. A year and a half we've been doing this.
A year and a half. How about that?
Yeah. That's awesome.
Started out as just a simple little project to get together.
Yeah. Well, I believe that's it for now. We're going to take a little bit of a break. We're still going to do two in August, but it's going to be a little bit before we get to them. Because we are both going on vacations, separate vacations. I'll be in Canada for a little while, but Dad, you're going to Europe.
Yeah, going to Europe. Amsterdam, Belgium, long time, Luxembourg, France.
That's going to be fantastic. So we'll be back in the middle of August, and we will be doing an episode on The Cowboys, a very late John Wayne film. One of the first I ever saw of John Wayne. Not the first, but one of the first. And one that has been requested a few times, actually. I believe this will be an interesting one, to say the least. Cowboys.
Thanks to John Wayne. Mm-hmm. All right.
So that's it for us this week and in July. So thanks for listening.
All right. Thanks. Adios, amigos.
Can't you see she's sick? Tired. She's bush.
Tired of being admired.
Let her alone.
Tired of love uninspired.
Get off the phone.
She's tired.
Don't you know she's pooped?
I've been with thousands of men.
Everything below the waist is kaput.